This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. It is the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. In the week when in the Sky Bet Championship, Norwich City racked up their 10th away win of the season. They've been promoted in the last five when reaching that tally. Peterborough United now lead the way in Sky Bet League One. And in Sky Bet League Two, the world's greenest football club, Forest Green Rovers, continue to lead by example. They already wear shirts made from bamboo and will now switch to ones made from recyclable plastic bottles and used coffee grounds. Welcome one and all, wherever you're listening to us in the world. We hope you and yours are safe and well. It's the official EFL podcast. He's one of the EFL's most enduring and infatigable personalities. Over two spells, he played for Rotherham for approaching a decade. He's been on their coaching staff since retirement for nearly another one. And in his half decade in charge as manager, well, the club have been relegated and promoted twice. So straight in with my key question, Paul. What's it going to take to stop the boom bust?
Cool, you've gone hard, haven't you?
Is it hard?
I thought you were going to ask me about my dog or something just generally casual, but
no,
that's fine.
I've decided with you, yep. I can just cut to the chase and then we'll work backwards towards the sort of character-based stuff. I don't need to build up to you. I can just go vadumph straight in.
So what is it going to stop us from getting dragged into a relegation battle?
You have worded it like that. I said the boom-bust cycle, because for every relegation, you've had a promotion. So that was not a negative question.
No.
That was not me saying you're being,
I'm not that guy, as you well know. And that's it's a valid question, mate, obviously, and thanks for the question. I'm looking forward to my answer, and then I'm going to listen to myself and think, is that what I've just said? I think... this year, we tried to attack the season with a bit more vigour, a little bit more belief, and be a little bit, if we're drawing a game, trying to win it, I think, if I'm honest. We tried to get more 3 points. Last time we were in the champ, we drew too many games, and hand on heart, that was my fault, as everything what goes wrong at the football club is. But, you know, at 70 minutes, we were 1-1 and we're thinking, God, this isn't a bad point. And looking back, if we could have turned them into wins and been a bit braver with our substitution, maybe we would have survived. So this year, we try to be braver. It might be a regret as well. But I just think we are definitely creating more chances. We're definitely causing more problems to the opposition. But in fairness, the opposition have improved the same amount. But I just think for us to succeed and to have a successful season, which is, in my opinion, is twofold. One is the lads play to their absolute optimum, but secondly, that you do have survival. Now, I think survival is really realistic to us this season. I do, and the performances they've shown in recent weeks, although I speak to you now on the back of four defeats, which seems a bit surreal, but their performances have been really good. I just think if they just stick together and keep their belief, because everyone keeps telling me how well we're playing, but if they just keep their belief to the final game, we might have enough to survive, and we might then, with the change in finances next year in the champ, we might be able to build an even stronger squad to hopefully stop this boom bust.
I mean, it's forthright and honest as always. I'm intrigued because we've had lots of conversations in the past about empathy and emotional intelligence, and you go from four wins in six where you must have been thinking we're on the move here, there's momentum, and then obviously you've got four consecutive defeats. Now that's a very different skill set to manage with a group of human beings, is it not, in propelling momentum but now trying to convince them the world is still full of joy off the back of a run like this, all in quite a short space of time with this compact season?
It is a different skill set, but then I think it's the same skill set, because I don't believe I ever tell lies. So, you know, I'm always straight down the middle and always performance driven. So we could lose 3-0 and play excellent, and the lads could come in and I could be high-fiving everyone, really proud of their performance. In the same way, we could win 3-0 and I'm disappointed with their performance, then they can sit down and listen to me talking to them for 10 minutes. So I think I'm always really stable, and I think the lads always, I like to think the lads always believe in what I say to them. So when we're on the back of four defeats, they were all by one goal, but on the back of four defeats, when I tell them how much trust and belief I have in them, I think, if nothing else, they believe what I say to them, if that makes sense. So I don't think they think, oh, the gaffer's desperate now. He's trying to, you know, put another joke in, or he's got to change the team. I don't think they look at me in desperation, because they know I have full confidence in them. I tell them all the time. We constantly give them feedback, a positivity. And I don't see any shame in any of our four defeats, ironically. I don't. Cardiff, we played excellent, although we went through Narnia at the end. The snow came down. It was like two different football games. And unfortunately, we conceded late on against Cardiff, who have won virtually every game since Mix took over. I think they possibly have. So there was no shame in that. We travelled to Brentford. Most people probably saw that on TV. And, you know, how well we competed in that. We could have got something out of that. In fairness, Norwich were significantly better than us, but we only lost 1-0. And we got the crossbar and had one cleared off in the last minute of the game. So, but last night, it was just a game too far physically. And that has no shame on the lads. That's my fault. I should have made more changes. I wanted to go and make changes after an hour. But looking back, three games in 6 days with about 800 miles on a bus was probably a step too far. So it's not like we've had four defeats and the lads ebbed of all confidence and I have to really pick them up and, you know, come in with a clown's outfit and a flower that sprinkles water on their faces. When they talk to me, I think they still have a real belief that they're playing well, but just sort of being a little bit on the side of unlucky. And sometimes football's like that. I watched Crystal Palace Brighton the other night, you know, and it's difficult to imagine Crystal Palace winning that game. So, and I don't think Brighton players will be too downhearted with their performance. So it's just about trying to keep the lads, you know, be realistic with them. You have to tell them when they underperform, quite honestly. But just recently they haven't, and they've been on a good run, and there's still a third of the season left. So, you know, togetherness is crucial.
How exhausting is it being you?
Very exhausting. As you can see by, I look like a Sharpie on this Zoom call. I've got lines where I could put 50p's, although I can see myself. I'm like disgusted. I don't even know who this guy is.
I thought you were looking the best I've seen you actually for a long time. But
don't
that's...
say that, mate. It makes me feel worse. If you just said, oh, mate, you look better with the sun on your face. The winter months aren't kind to bald people. We look better in the summer. I've noticed. We look amazing in the summer. Through the winter months, we deteriorate.
Yeah, I truly hope we all look better in the summer, having had the chance to have a bit of a holiday and some sunshine. But maybe a subject for another podcast. I ask the question because I always think of the club as being hewn in your image, and that's going to involve being the energy engineer for your players, but also sometimes I would assume for yourself too, because there must be days when you get up and don't quite feel as though you are on it.
Yeah, obviously that's the case. I mean, last night after last night's game, some of my staff were downbeat. So it's my job to pick them up. And then I get in my car and drive home on my own. And then, you know, I'm exhausted. In fairness, I spoke to my chairman last night, and he's not dissimilar to me. Neither of us were gracious in defeat, but you don't enjoy defeat. You're not involved in professional sport to enjoy defeat, quite obviously. But he was really supportive last night because I think he realised how down I would be. But it is difficult. There's no dispute in that. You know, I went to bed at 1 o'clock in the morning. I've watched the game back today. I joked before we started. I had a phone call off an agent, wanted to know why his player weren't playing. I spoke to four members of staff, trying to get another kit man in, trying to get that organised. Trying to watch tonight. I'll be watching Brentford Sheffield Wednesday because they're two of our next opponents. We're watching Reading at the moment, trying to work out a team to pick. And you try and sleep and you don't. You wake up thinking of the team. I've definitely got better since I first took the job on, don't get me wrong. But it's just all consuming, mate. And I've said this to you before, haven't I? And that's why I feel more settled in my skin. Like I was speaking to Chris Hughton last night, and I feel like I've done the job long enough now to earn my stripes and respect off other managers in a nice way. I'm not trying to sound, you know, big-headed or narcissistic, but I have a real respect for all managers who have lasted a period of time, like Chris Hughton has, the same as Mick McCarthy has. I text him after the game to say how well I thought they did against us. But I just think any football manager if you've done the job, you understand what people go through. It's just all consuming. So I've gone for a walk with my wife and my dog today for over 2 hours, of which in that 2 hours, I took five different phone calls, all football related, and each one 10 minutes in, I got the look off my wife of, look, we were coming for a dog walk. The highlight was I actually saw a Rotherham fan running through Sheffield in a Rotherham shirt. And he was like, is that Warnie? I went, it is. Well done, well done. So he looked in good shape, to be fair. So I was a little bit envious that I was walking and he was running. But it is tough, mate, because it's with you all the time, all the time. And, you know, managers get overpraised for when their team win, but they also get, you know, annihilated when the team loses. And I think realistically, neither's true. We're sort of in between the two. So there are days when you get up and you think, for example, I would expect tomorrow, because I didn't change the team a lot, there'll be a couple of my players who will be wanting to see me tomorrow. So I'm not averse to confrontation. It's not confrontation. I'm not averse to, you know, tricky conversations. But, you know, if I wake up on a Thursday morning with one on a Tuesday night, you go in, everyone's really happy, upbeat, you know, the cook, everybody. But you go in on a Thursday after a defeat, and then you've got, you know, people want to know why they're not in the team, and, you know, coaches want to know what we should be doing, and you go through the team selection. So some days are obviously a lot harder than others, but I presume that's the same with every job. I'm not trying to pretend this is harder than any other job, but you just don't leave it. I think that's probably the fairest thing to say.
Bearing in mind how I introduced you and the way in which your whole life has, not whole life, the way in which a big proportion of your life has been inextricably linked to Rotherham United.
Yeah.
Do you fear the sack? Do you fear the consequences of waking up one day and the club is no longer part of your life?
No, I don't fear the sack. What I fear is the build up to the sack. And that sounds a ridiculous thing to say, but I've had an amazing time at this football club, and we've worked solidly to, you know, maybe overachieve possibly. And I've given it everything. The day it ends will be sad, quite obviously. But the build up to the day it ends is the massive fear for me. I don't want to lose anyone's respect. I don't want to lose the relationship I have with the chairman, with the chief exec, with the commercial director. These are friends of mine. These are people I've known for years and years. That's what fears me. That's what scares me. I openly admit that. So I don't want to walk into the room, and as before, I could walk into the room and everyone be pleased to see me and look me in the eye. Then all of a sudden they go, oh God, here he is. That's my fear. Not this fear of sack, because I think I would get a job doing anything in life. I've got no fear of unemployment. That sounds very super confident, but that's not my fear. It's not my fear. If I got sacked tomorrow and I weren't fortunate enough to get a job in football or finance or whatever I chose to do then, or teaching possibly, then I'd probably buy a season ticket with my son and go and watch Rotherham play every weekend anyway. I wouldn't be bitter towards the club. I understand that the club always want to do well, and if I'm holding them back, you know, cut my legs. I'm absolutely fine with that. So I'm not fearful of the sack, mate. Honestly, I'd be heartbroken, and I joke with the team and the staff all the time saying I'd be standing at the fence, looking through the fence saying, look, can I come in? I know it's COVID, but I've been tested. So it would be sad, but I'm not fearful of it, mate. Definitely not fearful.
It's very difficult to draw ourselves away from this conversation for just 90 seconds, but I must say, elsewhere in the Sky Bet Championship, Jonathan Woodgate's taking the reins at Bournemouth until the end of the season. So too Nigel Pearson at Bristol City, who after six consecutive league defeats, immediately Nigel inspired an impressive win at Middlesbrough. It's Borough's fifth defeat in six at the Riverside, and Wycombe Wanderers picked up only their fifth win of the whole campaign, but their second in four matches at home to Reading, who Rotherham face at the weekend. Your Friday night game is the East Midlands Derby. It is Derby County against Nottingham Forest, in case you didn't work that one out for yourself. Juicy encounter between two of the current top six at 12:30. Bournemouth entertain Watford. It's Birmingham against QPR. Coventry visit Blackburn. And then with the teams at the top, Brentford at home to Stoke. Borough entertain Cardiff. Swansea against Bristol City. And Norwich travel to Wickham in your Sunday match. You mentioned Rotherham, where David Artell on a fortnight ago, and I was reminiscing about the great Rotherham team of the early 2000s. And then the subject came up that David, you, Paul Hurst and Mark Robbins have all gone on and are current EFL managers. That was some experience for you, was it not, that has kind of cemented the love you have for the football club, and says something about Ronnie Moore as your manager at the time that so many of you have been inspired to go into management yourselves.
Yeah, a lot of us have stayed in. I mean, like Polly, the goalkeeper's goalkeeping coach at Preston. Richie, my assistant, obviously played in that team as well. Hurst, he's now at Grimsby. Scotty, who played in that team, is my head of recruitment. So we've all stayed in football, but not because we were unbelievable football geniuses, quite obviously. We give that to Ronnie. But just the fact that I think we were just all similar, all had a really good work ethic, all were pretty grounded people. I mean, obviously, Dave told you the story about we got promoted from Old League 3. I mean, goodness knows what the leagues are called then, but the League 2 now into League 1. And yeah. Dave was quite good, to be fair. Local kid, done well, played a majority of the games. He's probably told you this, but I don't know if he's told you the second bit. So we all go away and have our summer holidays. And Dave comes back like 3 stone heavier, never played again because he just couldn't get fit. And he just had this like, I don't know, like we'd got promoted, brilliant. Like we have 8 weeks off and all the senior pros were like off season. You have like 2 weeks maybe. And we were fitness like kings, us lot. So the rest of us just trained constantly. We came back in. I remember seeing Dave like on day one thinking, cool, he's had a good summer. Have you seen him? And we started running and he was absolutely pulling cargo. And we were saying, what have you done? And he went, well, I've done nothing. And we're like, what? Nothing? And like I said, like all us lot were fitness freaks. So he struggled. I mean, obviously he isn't going to say that on the EFL podcast. He's coming across as this manager. But I guarantee now, because of that experience, in a weird way, he's probably a better manager because he probably gives them all, you know, post-season stuff to do, keeps really hard on them. And I hope some of their players listen to me saying this story. They'll be going, what, Gaffer done that? That's not what he says, but that's definitely what happened.
He didn't tell us this. And now I
see,
feel
it's
we've
rubbish,
got
isn't it?
Yeah, but now I feel I've got a game on. I've got a game back on to give his version of it. Then you'll want to come back on and we'll just keep this going all season. One of the headlines surrounding one of the latest match reports, regarding the game against Forest, talked about a roadmap to safety. You've already mentioned there's a third of the season left. Are you thinking that strategically? Do you look at it en masse, at what it's going to take? Are you plotting which games that become the must-win games where it must be 3 rather than 1 point or 0?
No. I wish I had some, you know, Carol Vorderman equation that would impress you all with, you know, I haven't really. I had a conversation with Rich before we played Derby the first time, actually, and said, look, we need at least 10 wins before the end of the season. We're still obviously, unfortunately, a long way off that. We probably need another 6. But I don't earmark games, no, I don't, because the best laid plans and all, you know, you could play a weakened side against a team that you think, look, we've got no chance in, and you could come away with a 1-0 defeat and you think, oh my goodness me, if I'd have played, gone all guns a-blazing. And then you could save your best players for the game that you think would be an easier game, and it just isn't like that. It isn't. And I think, apart from the last couple of weeks, the teams in the bottom 6 have struggled a little bit, but prior to them last 2 weeks, the informed teams were the bottom 8 teams. So It's a difficult one to, in my opinion, to earmark. And this year especially, because of, you know, the times we're in, the away games aren't as daunting as they were, but the home games aren't an advantage this season. So, you know, whereas before, you know, we, no disrespect to Coventry, but obviously we're competing with Coventry. If we play Coventry at home, everyone will go, that's a must win. You've got Coventry at home, you've got Coventry at home. Well, you haven't. You've got Coventry on a bit of grass and you know the changing rooms. There isn't a massive advantage at home anymore. There isn't a massive advantage away. With these many games so thick and fast, it's just really hard to judge. And I think it's really hard for teams to maintain standards and to be injury free. So I don't think you can plan it as much. I think most clubs would say differently, but I would say how we're doing it. We are living by the seam of our pants at times. So, you know, the team I picked last night, 10 o'clock in the morning, phone call off the physio, never a good sign. He's never phoned up to say, by the way, Gaffer, you won the lottery. And oh, by the way, all 18 players feel amazing. I thought I'd phone and tell you. So you answer the phone, you think, here we go. And I'm like, oh yeah. And he's like, hi Gaffer, you all right? I'm like, just tell me the news, mate. Just hit me. I'm sitting down. And my captain, Woody, wasn't available. So straight away, you know, everything we'd worked on, and Woody's a big part of our set piece plays as well. So he comes out of the team. And then last night, my other centre half picks up his 10th booking. So he's now out for two games. So, you know, 3 days ago, the home game against Reading looked a really winnable game. You take two of your centre halves out, you can't play with a back three. And now you're like, oof, what's happening now? So I think the best laid plans this season are sort of out the window for a lot of clubs, I think. The two games a week we've got now, there's going to be some really strange results. So we just try and win every game. And I know that is an absolute cheese off, but that is the truth.
It's a good way to finish. I've got to go. I've got to ring David Artell and ask him for photographic proof. See if he's willing. Oh, I've probably destroyed them, I suppose. Yeah.
If he lies, FaceTime me and include me in.
Fine, I'll do that. I suspect he will want to come back on. I suspect we'll then have to get you back on, and this could go on for the remaining third of the season. Thanks for joining us on the official EFL podcast. Thanks for being so uplifting.
No worries, had a great time.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
He's been promoted to the Premier League three times. He's played for Cardiff City, Birmingham City, Stoke City, Crystal Palace, Norwich City and Derby County. And after joining MK Dons last October, following a spell in Turkey, Cameron Jerome recently celebrated his 150th career goal. And of course, Cameron, you've been reunited with your former Norwich City captain, Russell Martin, who's now your manager. Now, listen, he's only a few months older than you, so how is this changing dynamic?
It's not really changing, to be honest with you. It feels a bit strange calling him Gaffer. Obviously, away from the lads, I speak to him as Russ, but, you know, obviously around the ground, the training ground, the football environment, obviously getting used to calling him Gaffer was pretty difficult to start with, but no, it's okay. I mean, we've always had a good relationship. That was the thing. That was the key for me coming down here. He was always a great leader for me and a great captain at Norwich, and he was always going to make that transition to become a coach and a manager. So when he had the first discussion with me about coming down in the summer, obviously I gave it some thought, and I was sort of waiting around for a few different options and things to present themselves. And the longer I was waiting, I thought, you know what, just go and play some football. Go and enjoy yourself. There's someone you know there. They've got an identification of how they want to play football. I looked at all the video clips. I went and played a friendly for them. And I thought, yeah, just go and play some football. Go and enjoy yourself. So, yeah, I found myself here and I'm enjoying it still.
Well, there's a couple of questions that come out of that answer. And I guess the first is to find yourself in that sort of limbo state where you're not quite sure whether to take that option or see if something maybe a bit bigger, better comes along, but in the middle of COVID as well. I mean, what was that like from a player's perspective to have all those different elements to try to find where you go next?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was a strange scenario for all players, I'm guessing, in the summer, because the COVID created the uncertainty. Obviously, it created that nervousness and the uncertainty within football clubs in terms of finances and recruitment and things like that. So no one knew how the transfer market was going to play out. The transfer window was a little bit different this time in terms of the time scale of it, so it was quite strange. I mean, I came back from Turkey after the season. I didn't stay there because of COVID. I had potentially another year to go out there, but I ended up, you know, coming back earlier than what I thought I was going to come back. So yeah, I found myself a free for the first time. So it was strange. It was, you know, sort of just training on your own and just sort of waiting around. I had a few offers from, you know, quite a few different places in terms of going back abroad, but I felt like it was better for myself and the family to be back in England, having been away for a few years. And then it was just sort of waiting for, you know, somebody to say, yeah. I mean, I had, you know, conversations and, you know, people saying, yeah, you know, we're trying to do something and we're just trying to get one or two out before we can get one or two in. And that was a similar pattern sort of thing. So I didn't want to just risk, you know, not playing really. I've always played. I've, you know, since 18 years old, I've, you know, since my debut, I've played you know, most games every week, every season sort of thing. So it was that what was driving me on to say, you know what, you know, even if it's dropping to League One, there's no harm in that. There's no shame in that. Just go and play football. As long as you can keep playing and contributing and think you can affect football matches, then I was always happy to go and do that. And obviously it makes it even better when you've got someone you've played with someone you know, you have a good relationship and you trust, and you know he's going to, you're going to become a part of something, and he wants to grow something and build something here, and there's a lot of younger players, and I just sort of bought into the idea of what the gaffer was sort of offering here, and it just fitted in perfectly to what I wanted to do.
And does he kind of dangle, listen, if it really takes off for you here, I'm not going to stand in your way to move on? Because that's obviously what might have happened for you in the January window, but also did happen for Richard Keogh, who needed to sort of get his career going again and things. So is that part of a mix from Russ's point of view?
Yeah, I mean, it was part of the plan, really. I mean, I had one or two teams higher up in different divisions, sort of, I was waiting for those sort of things to materialise. If they was going to materialise, I wasn't quite sure. So he said, look, let's come and play till January, sort of thing. And that was the conversation. If something happened, we had a clause in a contract to be able to go. But it got to the later stages of the window where something did happen, but I think it was just too late for the club to sort of find a replacement. And, you know, it was just one of them things. I mean, it was disheartening for me because it was somewhere I wanted to go. It was Cardiff. I started my career there and it was somewhere I wanted to go. And it would have been really nice to go back to Cardiff and sort of almost finish where you started. So that would have been sort of the icing on the cake in terms of your career. But I said to Russ, look, obviously, from our perspective, nothing changes. You know, it's not my first rodeo sort of thing. I'm not going to throw my toys out the pram as such and be someone I'm not. I'm just, you know, I'll crack on. I'll just see it through to the end of the season, and then we'll just assess our options then. We'll sit down and we'll have a conversation in the summer and we'll see where we go and see where we're at with things. So that was that, really. I mean, it was obviously, from a player's perspective, you know, moves can materialise or they can't materialise. And, you know, I probably wasn't the only one for that reason in January for someone not to get a move. So there's no sort of animosity or no ill feeling towards the gaffer in terms of what happened. It was just, you know, it's just football and it's business. So, you know, I've been in the game and in the business long enough to know these things, and I've seen it happen a million times.
Oh, but you've just landed me with possibly the first sentence I've ever been given in 25 years of my gnarly old career. You can see all the wrinkles and stuff now. It's not my first rodeo. Where did you pull that one from? That's an absolute beauty. I've never had that come up in a football interview before. Have you got a little list of those you just slip in occasionally to make your interviews interesting?
Yeah, there's a little piece of paper. I've got it off camera here, so you can't see it. It's a little piece of paper with some highlighted words. You know, rodeo was high up there in the list, so I thought I'd just slip that in early.
It's all a challenge that somebody's given you. Tell me something, just between you and I, nobody else listening and all the rest of it. Is there something quite nice to be in a position where you're enjoying it, you're scoring loads of goals, and you're thinking, do you know what? I've got this. I'm the man. I'm, you know, your confidence is uber high, especially when you've had that sort of uncertainty period last summer in deciding where to go. Is there just something nice to be there and thinking, yep, this fits me a treat?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's no better feeling as a footballer, and, you know, everyone in the game can sort of relate to this, where you're playing in the team and you're thoroughly enjoying it. You're playing a style of football what everybody in the team really, really enjoys playing. You're playing such an open end-to-end game, and that's the beauty of English football. But when you've got teams like Brentford, you've got teams like Norwich, you've got teams like ourselves in League One, you've got maybe Oxford off the top of my head, maybe, who sort of try and play like that. And it's just like refreshing to see teams who play with structure, with organisation, with everything, with detail. And it is really nice to be a part of something that, you know, somebody really believes in, and that's his philosophy and style of football. And all the players in the group believe in it and trust it, and they trust in the players, and it is really nice. At this age as well, especially, you know, 34, coming into the twilight, you know, last couple of years of your career sort of thing, it's nice to be enjoying it with a smile on your face, like you say, and then the confidence comes, and, you know, you play in the team which creates chances and scores goals, so it's just nice to be a part of that environment. It makes day-to-day coming into the training ground and coming in and doing your work enjoyable.
And is the sensation the same regardless of whether you are nicking your 150th goal away at Rochdale or you're beating Pepe Reina from 30 yards at Anfield? Is the sensation when the ball hits the back of the net just exactly the same?
Yeah, no, it's the same. It's the same. A tapping from a yard out is just as special as hitting one from 25 yards. But, you know, it is nice to score, obviously, better goals, but they all count on the score sheet. It says your name. next to the time of the goal you scored, and that's it, hitting the net, that's all it's about. And you know, I think as a striker and as you know, as a player, there's no better feeling than scoring a goal. Certainly not in football anyway.
I want to take you right back to the start, even before it didn't quite work out and you didn't sign for my beloved Borough as a youth. But I want you to take you back to Stile Common. This was the, was it a youth team, local team in the Huddersfield area where you started? Because I was reading, you got Anthony Griffin there, who went on to have a pretty good non-league career. You got Fraser Campbell, who is actually now at Huddersfield, I think was in and around you. Ruben Noble Lazarus was the youngest ever EFL debutant. I think he still is. So I guess my question is, where your career goes, obviously talent's involved, but is there sometimes a bit of fate in there and a bit of influence? So, you know, somebody like a Paul Wilkinson was instrumental for you when you ended up at Grimsby and he recommended you to Cardiff, etc. Can that sometimes be the difference where some of those other names, like an Anthony Griffin, drifted off to non-league? If he had slightly better opportunities, he could have had a very different career path?
Yeah, most definitely. I think talent obviously plays a part. I think it's about your desire, your will and all these sort of things which makes and separates players from different levels of football. You know, if somebody's got that hunger, the drive, the desire, the determination, those key little things, along with your talent. But a lot of it is luck and timing, like you say, where you might have two players who have got talent, you know, being in a local grassroots team, but somebody, like you say, I had Paul Wilkinson, who sort of, you know, he's made my career, in my eyes anyway, certainly in the early part of it, and what he's done and the help he still gives me today. But, you know, you have somebody who believes in you and sort of guides you in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
And that guidance and timing and luck almost is key sometimes in football. You can have all the talent in the world, but, you know, if you're particularly going to another club, but they've also got an equally talented player in your position, it means nothing, does it? I suppose if, you know, you're, yeah, you know, somebody says, oh, look, I've got a striker, really good, pacey striker, put him into Leicester. But Leicester go, no, we've got Jamie Vardy's, you know, pacey striker, like one of the best, you know, strikers in the Premier League. So it's that sort of fit sometimes. If you're not, you know, if it's not your time, it's not your time sort of thing. And, you know, then you take a different turn and a different path, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it looks like it's your time at MK Dons at the moment. Give or take, we're talking to you in the aftermath of the midweek defeat at Shrewsbury. It was 4 wins out of 5 just before that. There's definite signs that a very decent base has been laid there and you're moving on to the next level with the club, would you say, Cameron?
Yeah, definitely. I'd definitely say that. I think what's happened is the guys have grasped, certainly over the last couple of months, how to manage games especially, and that was what was hurting us probably at the beginning of the season, where we was a little bit naive in certain situations and times, and we was conceding a lot of goals from our, you know, errors and things like that. We did concede 3 goals from our errors last night, but we're just managing games better, we're seeing games out, we're getting better, we're getting stronger, there's a better balance to the squad. The manager's managed to identify some players in the last transfer window, which the chairman's backed him, and he's reinvested some money from the football club into the playing squad. And we've got that better balance and a better depth also. So he's been able to chop and change the squad a little bit. And, you know, that's been a key to like I said, going on that run up until last night. We was, you know, in a rich vein of form. And, you know, obviously the confidence was flowing through the team. But, you know, as is the Football League, there's always a few bumps in the road along the way. So, and there's always an opportunity to get back to winning ways again, not so shortly on Saturday. So, yeah, it is definitely been a turn in the form. And hopefully we can sort of, you know, go onwards and upwards with the rest of the season and just see where it takes us. There's no pressure at this club at the minute in terms of where we're expected to be or expected to finish in the table. It is a work in progress. So that is another beauty of it. You know, you can go out there and relax in games and know that it's just about winning football games and seeing where you go from there, really.
Yeah. In the same way as the joy of scoring a goal is exactly the same throughout your career, is the pain of defeat, you know, are you still a Mardy beggar on the bus leaving, you know, Shrewsbury having been whacked for 4? Does it still niggle you and live with you as you fall asleep in your bed at night? Or have you learned to process it better?
I think you've learned to accept it better after. But I think digesting it's still painful to digest the game. And you're sort of going over scenarios. And, you know, obviously nowadays with the technology you've got and, you know, the coaching staff are watching the games and the video, and then you do the video analysis in the morning and you're looking at it and you're thinking, oh, what could I have done better? What should I have been in that position? Could I have offered somebody a way out? And, you know, there's a million one things you're thinking about, but ultimately we didn't turn up. We, you know, we was the makings of our own downfall yesterday, and we got out hustled and outworked in the first 20 minutes. And, you know, that was the key to losing the game, really. And, you know, Shrewsbury, fair play, they come with a high press. They did their homework. They pressed us high and they forced us into mistakes. And, you know, they took advantage of that.
Yeah. I don't think people outside football realise just how important feedback is, that everything is analysed and looked over. You know, a lot of us in everyday life don't necessarily sort of put ourselves under that microscope, and a lot of people kind of avoid it. Do you always learn something new as a result of those feedback sessions?
Oh, 100%. I mean, analysis and data and things like that, even at this level, it's a key part in football, you know, and the higher up you go, the more data, information, analysis there probably is as well. You know, the gaffer will come in after a game and win or lose, identify good things and bad things and things we can improve on, and then we'll look at how we're going to progress for the fixture that week, and we'll, you know, we'll go through certain scenarios on the training field, and tactically we'll be ready for the next game and the next set of oppositions, just from sort of looking at the previous games, and he'll tweak things a little bit. And yeah, it's a big part of football, and you probably don't realise it from the outside. When you're in here, it just seems normal. But like, if you know, you used to bring a random fan in and say, spend a day after a game, he'd be thinking, wow, they do all these things after a game, or the build up to a game. Would that not confuse players? But no, it's just I think it's just progressed over the years, like you said. You know, like, you know, the last sort of 5-10 years especially, it's exploded, and it's a key weapon in football now.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point. Elsewhere in Sky Bet League One over the past 7 days, a couple of 3-0 wins for Peterborough United, and three more goals from Sammy Schmoddicks have taken them top. 40-year-old James Coppinger, who will retire at the end of the season, came off the bench to score his team's equaliser against Hull City in the 12th minute of added on time, and wearing a kit he'd designed himself to recognise his 17 years with Doncaster Rovers. And Bristol Rovers brought in Joey Barton to replace recently departed manager Paul Tisdale. Your fixtures this coming weekend: Hull City visit Wimbledon, Sunderland are at Crewe, Doncaster are at Ipswich, Peterborough entertain Wigan, Lincoln are at Plymouth, Portsmouth entertain Gillingham. There's a bit of a scuffle down the bottom in Swindon against Northampton, and Cameron's MK Dons are at home to Oxford United. What about your own future? James Coppinger still playing at 40 years old, mate. I mean, are you thinking about when you do hang up your boots, or are you very much focused on maximising what you've got left in those old legs of yours?
A bit of both, to be honest with you. Obviously, I'm taking steps into after football in terms of what I'm going to do after football. But
what are you going to do? What are your plans? What are you going to do?
I don't know yet. Honestly, I don't know. A bit, maybe a bit of coaching, maybe recruitment, that side of things. Who knows? But I've got an interest in football. I love talking about football. I love watching football. Obviously, I've played, had a long career in football, so it'd be something that I'd be keen to sort of play in the game, or sort of stay in the game. I still think I've got a lot to offer playing at the minute as a player. So yeah, I mean, my legs aren't slowing down. I'm strong, I'm fit. I'm resilient, so I'll keep playing. I'll probably get to Coppinger's 40, probably, to be honest with you. We've got Dean Lewington here, who's 37, 38 on 800 games. So my focus is catching Louis, to be fair, catching the skipper. I'm about 200 games behind, but yeah, I think I can get there, to be honest with you. My body's, touch wood, it's still holding up.
You love talking about football, and we're glad you did today. Thanks for joining us on the official EFL podcast.
Cheers.
This is the official EFL podcast.
Into Sky Bet League 2. And the last time I spoke to our next guest was last March, and it was a few days before the entire fixture calendar was postponed and the UK consequently headed into lockdown. The Swindon Town team he was part of, propelled by his 25 league goals in 28 matches, were subsequently declared champions. But by the time this season got underway, Owen Doyle was one of a brand new starting lineup for Bolton Wanderers. This weekend, he'll play his 28th league game for them, and despite their slow start, five wins in their last six matches suggest he could be heading for another promotion. Let's do first things first, okay? First of all, there's a very good film of you in the BBC archives, but it never got to get shown, mate, because the fixtures went. The programme got completely pulled or changed, and we'll never get to celebrate. Did you celebrate your Swindon promotion? Was there anything at all?
Yes, so when the lockdown briefly, when society opened back up briefly during the summer, we managed to get together for an evening in Swindon, so we had a good drink together down there. Yeah, so when we lifted the trophy, we got together as well, but that was at a time where we all had to kind of stay away from each other. And I don't know if you're seeing it when we're lifting the trophy and spraying the champagne, we're all 2 metres away. Like, it was a bit of a strange moment.
Yeah, I mean, so to that end, have you kind of fully processed it, closed off that period in your history, or do you think because the season was never completed in the traditional way, will there always be that kind of sense of yes, celebration, but will it always be a little bit, well, certainly be a weird time, will it be an incomplete time for you?
I think the fact we never got to play it out properly, like, I suppose the top two divisions got to, it was a bit disappointing or whatever, but I think we were deserved champions, like, from being honest. If you looked at our run-in, we had the most favourable run-in compared to the other clubs around us. And throughout the season, we'd won. I think we'd won every single game against the bottom half of the table. So it was looking good for us on the pitch. But I'll always look back on it and think we were deserved champions, even though it got finished by a fraction of a point or whatever it was with the PPG. But it was very enjoyable, three quarters of a season, I suppose you could say.
Yeah. And it was a truly great video that we did as well. I'm just sorry that the great British public never got to see it. And you were in typical modest style all the way, while I kept saying, tell us about the anatomy of a goal scorer. And you just kept saying, oh, the lads put the ball in the middle and I knock it in the neck. So typically modest from you. What was you thinking behind the move to Bolton then?
It was a family move. I'm based in Liverpool here, and It was hard going down to Swindon. Obviously, Richie at the time was very good to me. He kind of laid out me week for me and gave me 3 days off a week. So I only had to go down for 4 days. And I was away from the family a lot during the week. So being able to come home every day was a massive factor in coming back up north. And that would have been one of the big reasons, obviously, for not signing back down there.
Yeah. Do you have to be careful how you talk about that particular subject? Because you know what fans are like. Well, if he really cares about our club, he'd move everything, lock, stock and barrel down to the area and stuff. Are you always a bit cautious when you have to kind of have that conversation?
No, I'm actually one of them players that doesn't really care what people kind of think. I'm not growing up a fan of any of the clubs that I played for. So like any move that I've made, and I've made a good few of them now, is that they've been either for financial reasons or for the family. And it sounds cold, it sounds a bit harsh and stuff, but it's just me telling you the truth.
Does that mean the sort of situation you walked into with Bolton was water off a duck's back for you? Because so many new faces coming in at the same time would, I guess, be a bit daunting for some players.
The first few days, obviously, I suppose you could say, when you walk into a club, aren't the easiest, trying to get to know lads and stuff. When I signed, though, I was the second player to sign at the club. There was only two or three of us there, I think. So first day of pre-season was a bit weird. It was weird anyway, because I think you were only able to go in bubbles, you're only able to go in sixes and stuff because of the situation. And as the weeks went on, you got to see more of the lads, even though they were in at different times of the day and stuff. So it was a bit strange in that sense, yeah.
Yeah, so you're getting to know people from a footballing talent point of view. You're getting to know personalities as well, Owen?
In Bolton.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's two sides to this, isn't there? There's one, having an appreciation of your fellow player on the pitch, but I guess there's also those human dynamics as well. Do I like him? Don't I like him? Does he share my views? Doesn't he share my views, etc.?
Of course, yeah, of course. Always all that stuff to take on board. And you kind of figure out and see if what type of lad you kind of sway towards. I'd say you kind of get your little cliques in your groups in the dressing room, not in a negative way, but in a positive way, and it kind of goes from there. So it's an enjoyable club to play for them. I'm loving every minute of it so far.
No, well, I can tell the way it's starting to come together. But, I mean, it must be impossible not to point the slow start at that huge change in personnel, surely, that it does take time for people to gel.
Yeah, I think I think we've had a really strong January window now as well. I think we probably had the strongest in the league with the personnel we brought in, and that's kind of stepped us up massively. And now it's looking positive now going forward.
Yeah, I mean, could you see the manager kind of not struggling to do his job, but straining to find the right combination through those first few months of the season?
But he's been very good so far. There's been a lot of situations where he's had to tinker with formations and stuff to try to get the best out of the personnel he had at the times, and it's been difficult. Like the way I kind of sum it up so far is that the first half of the season was crap, and the second half seems to be getting a bit better. So. As long as we can maybe make up the ground we lost in the first half, it might be a half a successful season in the end.
I love interviewing you. You are so straightforward to deal with. You just, if it's a rubbish question, you get a three-word answer. If it needs a straightforward summarisation, you just did it. Here's me using 27,000 words to ask a question, and you can perfectly sum it up in about three. From a personal point of view, are you, if you don't get off the mark too quickly or the goals are a little slow coming, are you a fretter? Are you a worrier about that kind of stuff?
I'm always keen to get the first one. Once the first one goes in, the pressure seems to come off. I think it was a good few games in here as well, but it didn't come. I think it was Harrogate away, maybe it was the first one. But yeah, just the first one really is just, come on, God, come on, need this goal. And after that, it's okay.
Yeah. Is that to get outsiders off your back, or is that the pressure you put on yourself, Owen?
I'll not be just myself. I wouldn't be paying too much attention to what's going on outside me, so it's I put a lot of pressure on myself to kind of hit the back of the net as much as I possibly can, I suppose.
Yeah, but you scored loads of goals as well last season, so inevitably Bolton fans, even though they're not there in person, are going to be thinking, right, we know what we're doing here. All we've got to do is get the ball to Owen Doyle. He's going to score his 25-30 goals and that'll be us promoted. There's a bit of that there as well, isn't there? There's a lot of pressure comes with being a centre forward.
I suppose you could say that, Joe. If I'm being honest with you, look, I don't really... I wouldn't feel the pressure in that sense of I've scored a lot of goals last year and I'll do it again for this club. It's just I'm very limited in my centre forward play, and I really, really rely on the players that are around me. And we've got some really good players. We had some great players last year at Swindon that were able to find me inside the box, and it seems to be going that way now this year again. So it's I'm enjoying the football again, and as I said, like hopefully the second half of the season is a hell of a lot better than the first half.
So Owen, you know what you need to score goals. So in situations across your career where maybe you haven't been set up quite right, is the onus on you to go to your manager and say, this is not quite working for me, I need the ball here, there? Or is the onus on the manager to come to you to actually spot it for himself?
If you look maybe in the past of our clubs where I haven't scored a lot of goals, it would have been situation, and this is completely my fault, I wouldn't be blaming any other managers or other players, is that I need to be kind of in a team that's possession based and is able to kind of has quality around me in that sense, because I'm not a big man, I'm not one for tricks, I'm not one for scoring 25, 30 yards or something like that. I'm more of a bit of a fox in the box, I suppose, and that's just the way it is. But I'm confident that once that good team is around me and stuff, that I'm able to pick up the odd goal.
Yeah, I love some of the phrases we're getting on this week's official EFL podcast. Cameron Jerome came up with a few of them just before you came on. Fox in the box. So earlier in the season, Ben Gibson described Teemu Pukki as a con man. He said he actually tries to look nonchalant in the course of a game to trick the defenders and lull them into a false sense of security. Are you similar? Do you kind of try and play with the defenders' minds and almost make them think you're having an off day, and then boom, you just whip in and you nick the chickens out of the hen hut?
No, I'm definitely not that clever. if I'm being honest with you, I wouldn't be a big fan of touching the ball outside the box at all. If I had it my way, I wouldn't be passing to anyone or trying to receive any passes outside the box. But I know that that has to be done for build-up play and stuff. But I just know when we get high up the pitch and the ball's around the box, I'm fairly handy at getting away from my man. And I kind of suppose you could say I kind of know where the back of the net is without sounding big time or anything. But yes, that's the way I'd kind of sum it up.
Yeah. Well, how old are you at the moment, Owen?
I'm 32.
Yeah, well, when the moment comes for you to hang your boots up, all you need to do is write a little book. Say, Owen Doyle's straightforward approach to football. And that'll take away a lot of the whole industry of people talking endlessly. People like me talking endlessly, waffling on, whereas you can distill it down to a few simple sentences. Elsewhere in Sky Bet League 2, Cheltenham Town won at Cambridge United in the battle between two of the automatic promotion contenders. After 13 league games without a win, Colchester United parted company with manager Steve Ball, and there were huge wins for two of the clubs fighting for their EFL status. A first for Grimsby Town since Paul Hurst's return, and also for Barrow, who had just replaced Michael Jolly after only 2 months in charge with Rob Kelly for the rest of the season. Your fixtures this coming weekend: 1 o'clock kickoff, Exeter travel to Crawley. It's Tranmere visiting Leighton Orient in the 3 o'clock, so to Morecambe to Mansfield. Cambridge go to Port Vale, Cheltenham go to Scunthorpe, Salford go to Southend United, and in the 5:30 kickoff, it's Forest Green against Colchester. Bolton entertain Barrow as one of the 3 o'clocks. From this point on, then, do you feel you're now, Owen, in such a groove? It's heads down, it's foot to the boards, it's just pushing to get into those playoff places, and then who knows where you can get to from there?
Yeah, obviously with this club comes great expectation, and nobody wanted us to kind of be in the position we are now. But I wouldn't say it's impossible to go on and try and make a success of this and get promoted, but we'll definitely be giving it everything we can. It's we have a lot of catching up to do, with no doubt about that. But the league's already open this year. It's not like it was last year, and it's kind of shaped a bit differently. And we're confident now with the team that we have that we can really win a lot of games between now and the end of the season. Please God, it gets us up there.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like the teams in the automatic places are like tens and tens of points ahead of you, is it? And there is still a third of the season still to go.
Yeah, I think 3 or 4 weeks ago we were 6 points off the bottom, and now we're 6 points off the top three. So it just shows you how intense, and it's going to be a very good run in. But as I said, I firmly believe that we probably had the best window in January out of the whole league, and please God, we have put it together so far, but we kind of maintain that and be consistent now towards the end of the season.
Yeah, and the fox in the box is not doing badly either. He's starting to weigh in with a few too, huh?
Just trying my best, yeah.
What a wonderful way to finish. I just try me best. Yeah. Owen, lovely to talk to you. Thanks for joining us on the official EFL podcast.
And you, thanks for having me on.
That's it for this episode. A big thank you to Owen Doyle, Cameron Girone and Paul Warne. If you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button, and please share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. See you next week for another episode of
the official EFL podcast.